This podcast is about Catherine Parsons. Catherine Parsons, born in 1859 and died in 1933. Before I start, let's think about some words that come up a lot these days. First of all, diversity and inclusion. What on earth is diversity and inclusion? Well, if something is diverse, it shows a great deal of variety. So in other words, a diverse set of people would be a group of people who differ from one another. In a company, it is generally their mission to recruit a diverse range of employees, for example, a mixture of men and women. The result is to achieve a competitive business advantage by fostering a more creative and innovative workforce. Inclusion is the act of respecting and valuing a diverse pool of employees, including all of them to reach their full potential and to contribute to the business as a whole. Another word I'd like us to consider is discrimination. This is the unjust treatment of people on the grounds of seven characteristics, including race, age, or gender. It means treating someone unfairly because they possess certain characteristics. It's actually against the law to discriminate against someone because of their characteristics. Another word we come across is feminism. Feminism is the belief in social, economic, and political equality of the sexes. For me, I think it means that I should get the same pay as men doing the same job as me. But I can tell you, as a female in engineering for 30 years, this has not always been the case. Although we have come a long way now to remedy that. So let's think about what was going on 100 years ago in this country. And what are we doing now? Catherine Parsons is a brilliant example of someone who brought about positive change for women in the UK, and it is because of her and women like her that I was able to enter into a career in engineering which has lasted for 30 years. So I am especially grateful to her. Catherine was a member of the Bethel family from the East Riding of Yorkshire. And she was the youngest of the 12 children of William Froggatt Bethel and Maria Elizabeth née Beckett. Now, the only thing I actually know about her early life was that she studied painting with a small colony of artists down in Cornwall. Anyway, the Bethel family ancestral home was Rise Park, which is also known as Rise Hall, near Hull. That property was recently owned and then sold by TV personality and property developer Sarah Beeney. Charles Parsons was working at Kitson's in Leeds and living at his brother's property in Headingley, according to the 1881 census. And that's where they met. Catherine married Charles Parsons in 1883. And during their courtship, she has known to have described him as a strange and weird young man. There is also a famous story about her becoming ill during their early relationship. Charles had taken her to Roundhay Lake so that he could test torpedoes at 7 o'clock in the morning. And the poor woman stood on the banks of the lake, shivering in the cold, and contracted rheumatic fever. And apparently it took until the spring of 1884 for her to fully recover. Anyway, Catherine went on to be a very, very busy lady. She was a keen gardener. She ran big houses with several staff. She supported Charles Parsons on work trips to go and visit customers. She entertained very important guests at home. She loved to ride her horses across the acres of moorland, was interested in history and folklore, and had a very good knowledge of agriculture, which she used on her farm in Northumberland. She now has her own Wikipedia page and is remembered with huge respect in amongst correspondents of the Women's Engineering Society, and we'll talk about that later. In addition, her contribution to engineering has been celebrated and documented in a very recent book by Henrietta Heald called Magnificent Women and Their Revolutionary Machines, in which she introduces as follows. The magnificent women who populate this book called themselves engineers, but their revolutionary machines were more than simply mechanical objects such as cars and boats and planes. Through their achievements at work and their campaigns to promote women's liberation, born of the fight for the franchise and their own wartime experiences, they prepared the ground for a social revolution that would put fair, equitable treatment of the sexes firmly on the political agenda. It amounted to a vibrant wave of feminism that, until now, has largely eluded the attention of historians. So, back to Catherine Parsons. Catherine took a keen interest in engineering and encouraged her daughter, Rachel, to become an engineer. Eventually, they would go on to start an all-female company called Atalanta in 1920. And you can find out what happened to this all-female company in the Magnificent Women and Their Revolutionary Machines book by Henrietta. Now, on to World War One. Following the outbreak of World War One, as described in Henrietta's article in History Today magazine, Lloyd George was well aware that he could not provide the vast quantity of munitions required without female labour. Would that include introducing a diverse workforce? A lot of women entered factories to replace the men who had gone to war, but the men left working in the factories were concerned about their loss of status and the threat to their wages. The problem was called dilution, so it was decided that women could only be trained to a semi-skilled level, and it was also agreed that they had to be supervised. That way, the skilled workers would not feel undermined. Would that be discrimination? Further to this, an act known as the Restoration of Pre-War Practices Act was created to ensure the returning male soldiers got their jobs back. During the outbreak of war in 1914, the Girls' Friendly Society decided to convert Westgate House on Westgate Road into Newcastle into comfortable digs to accommodate female munitions workers, and Catherine Parsons was asked to open it. At that time, 150,000 women and girls were known to be working in engineering in Britain, and the numbers were rapidly increasing. By the end of World War One, there were around 1 million women working in factories in the UK. To better understand what their lives were like, you can look anywhere on the internet for the word munitionette and it'll tell you all about it. But one well-known anecdote is the one about the Canary Girls. The TNT used for packing shells penetrated the skin, turning it yellow. And some workers even gave birth to bright yellow babies. Eventually, repeated exposure to TNT caused toxic jaundice. Anyway, just as a side fact, up to 1918, the year the war ended, women had not been allowed to vote. But in 1918, women over 30 did win the right to vote. However, it was another 10 years before this was extended to women over 21. Also, another by-the-way fact, it wasn't until 1969 that the voting age for everyone was reduced to 18. So, onward to the end of World War One. The North East Coast Institution of Engineers and Shipbuilders was founded in 1884. And at one time it occupied Bulbeck Hall on Westgate Road, very near to the Mining Institute. Its main task was the publication of papers, and it played a role in technical education, facilitating the exchange of ideas and information among engineers and shipbuilders. In 1919, after the end of the First World War, Catherine Parsons became the first female member at the North East Coast Institution of Engineers and Shipbuilders. And at the victory meeting in Newcastle-upon-Tyne on the 9th of July, she gave a famous speech about women engineers. It has been a strange perversion of women's sphere, said Catherine, to make them work at producing the implements of war and destruction, and to deny them the privilege of fashioning the munitions of peace. Catherine Parsons also said, the then Minister of Munitions, Mr. Lloyd George, made a stirring appeal to women to come out of their homes and help to save their country. But women were already clamouring to be allowed to work in the shops. Because of the Restoration of Pre-War Practices Act had made it virtually impossible for women engineers who had not worked in engineering firms before the war to continue in their careers, this injustice prompted Catherine and her daughter Rachel to launch a campaign for women's rights. One of Catherine Parsons' greatest achievements was that, with her daughter Rachel and Caroline Haslett in 1919, she was a co-founder of the Women's Engineering Society, which over 100 years later still exists today. The first president was Rachel Mary Parsons, 1919 to 1921, and Catherine Parsons became president in 1921 until 1925. The Women's Engineering website reads, the Women's Engineering Society is a charity and professional network of women engineers, scientists and technologists offering inspiration, support and professional development. Working in partnership, we support and inspire women to achieve as engineers, scientists and leaders. We encourage the education of engineering and we support companies with gender diversity and inclusion. With that in mind, here are some rough but interesting statistics and facts for you to consider. At the start of World War I, the company C.A. Parsons' total workforce was just over 1,000, and they employed 21 women, so that's about 2%. But by the end of the war, there were 257 women employed there, so that's about a quarter of the workforce. The Institute of Engineering website stated on the 8th of March 2020 that just 12% of those working in engineering companies are women. The Women's Engineering Society website states that in 2017, 15.1% of engineering undergraduates are women, compared with 30% in India. In fact, the UK has the lowest percentage of female engineering professionals in Europe. At my company in Newcastle upon Tyne, we offer apprenticeships in engineering every year, and we receive hundreds of applications every year from boys, but usually about 4 from girls. My question is, why? Why do girls think that engineering is only for boys? Why are girls not applying for engineering apprenticeships? It seems to me we've come a long way in offering the opportunities to girls to come into engineering, but it seems we still have such a big mountain to climb. Anyway, back to Catherine Parsons. So all those years ago, Catherine Parsons drove her own car, often for long distances. And this may not seem unusual to girls today, but this was very unusual for women at that time. In a professional capacity, she worked for the women's branches of the Conservative and Unionist Association, and she restarted the Women's Guild of Empire, which was an educational movement. She was prominent among the suffragettes of North East England, and she was also a pioneer of the Girl Guides movement. She started the Northumberland branch with another well-known suffragette, Miss Nora Elizabeth Balls. Nora was a member of the Women's Social and Political Union. This was the leading militant organisation campaigning for women's suffrage in the United Kingdom and had the motto, "Deeds, not words." The Women's Social and Political Union was founded by Emmeline Pankhurst in 1903. Emmeline is best remembered for organising the UK suffrage movement and working to help women to win the right to vote. And I'm sure you will have heard of Emmeline Pankhurst. So, back to Catherine Parsons. Catherine served for many years as a magistrate in Newcastle. And when she died, Thomas Oliver, who was chairman of the bench at Newcastle Police Court, was quoted in the Evening Chronicle as saying, "Lady Parsons played such an important part in the industries of Tyneside. She played a large part in the social and economic life of the city." And you have to remember, this was a long time ago. Charles and Catherine had two children, Rachel and Algernon. Captain Algernon George Parsons was killed in April 1918 during World War I whilst serving as acting major in the Royal Field Artillery. It is said that Charles and Catherine Parsons never recovered from this loss, and their son is buried in a military grave in Belgium. The family owned Holland Hall in Wylam and Ray Domain near Kirkwelpington, and it is also said that the family did not return to Holland Hall after they lost Algernon. And we know that the army returned his belongings and his medals to his mother at Kirkwelpington at Ray Domain. Medals and all photographs of Algernon have gone. We don't know where they are. The whereabouts are unknown. We've asked the family. We've asked local people. But so far, no medals, no photographs have turned up anywhere. But I did manage to get one photograph of Algernon from a Woolwich journal, which shows him as a very, very young man in 1906. In Kirkwelpington at St. Bartholomew's Church, there is a plaque on the wall on the right-hand side, which was commissioned by Charles and Catherine Parsons for Algernon. And it said that every week Catherine sat beneath it for church service to remember her son. Sir Charles died in 1931, and Lady Catherine Parsons died in 1933 following a battle of cancer of the spine. She's buried alongside her husband in a very modest grave in Kirkwelpington at St. Bartholomew's. To coincide with the centenary of the end of World War I, I undertook a project to restore the graves in 2018 because they'd started to wear a bit. A project was undertaken and it was supported by many people who had a connection to both Parsons the family and C.A. Parsons the company. In 1933, when Catherine Parsons passed away, she had left a letter for her staff, which she had written 2 months before her passing, and this had been read out by the minister at the time. In October 2018, 85 years after her passing, following the grave restoration project, a service was held with 130 attendees, and the letter was read out once more. I leave you with this letter now, as I think it tells us a lot about Catherine Parsons' character, and it speaks volumes about her bravery and her independent personality. "Dear friends, I leave this letter to be opened after my death because none of us would like the strain of an individual farewell. I have valued your friendship and service very highly. No one could have had more willing service or ungrudging help than I, and I thank you all for contributing to make my life here so easy and happy, especially during the last 2 years. Some of you may have thought that I leave everything here, my beautiful place and my many friends, with too light a heart. But I remembered that all these good things are lent us for the short time of our lives to make the best use of, and that we must be ready and willing to answer the call whenever it comes and start the last journey. Faithfully yours, Catherine Parsons."